ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. Thank you all for coming. It's a very busy evening. Those who've been following the news probably are aware we're all, some of us are hopping up and down. There's more Bozhi Lai developments continuously, it seems. But we have an extremely interesting speaker this evening and a really terrific documentary. And so I hope you'll all pay great attention to this. This is a subject a lot of people haven't really been able to look at. But before I get into this, let me first remind everybody, please turn off your cell phones. In fact, before I came up here, I quickly ran over and grabbed mine just to make sure I muted mine. We do videotape these events, and we put them up on our website. And it's really a shame if somebody's making a particularly profound comment, and then you get a beep beep interrupting it, and you can't quite figure out what they really said. So please, everybody, turn off your cell phones now. Second of all, let me tell you just briefly a couple of upcoming events. We have on Tuesday, we have the new chief executive, or the new editor-in-chief, rather, Wang Zhengwei of the South China Morning Post coming to speak at lunch. And then on Wednesday, we have Cao Ri, who is the top editor at CCTV. So we have, just coincidentally, two media speakers coming up next week, Tuesday and Wednesday lunch. I thought some of you here might be particularly interested in those speakers, given that we've got a media speaker here tonight. With that, let me introduce Christine Choi. She is one of the best-known documentary filmmakers on China. Some of you might know her here because she used to be in Hong Kong. She did 3 years here as head of the setting up one of the best film schools here. She has done work all over China. She's done very interesting work in the States, is well-known in New York City in her role at New York University. And this evening, you're going to see what is one of the few efforts to really look at sort of a grassroots level of what is happening in rural education in China. And afterwards, Ms. Choi has very kindly agreed to take some questions. And with that, Ms. Choi.
Hi, everybody. It's the first time I met Keith and was talking about, and believe it or not, we graduated from the same school. And of course, he was a graduate student and I was an undergrad. Guess what school? Duh. What's the most famous school in the United States?
UNC.
Princeton. I'm so really, really happy to be here. And this film is extremely low budget. And I'm trying to do a sequel of this film with the different themes. So please enjoy. And afterwards, just shoot me with the questions.
我到太原打工，赚了钱让我三地去上学。你无声黑白，沉默年代或许不该太遥远的相爱。我送你离开天涯之外，你是否还？
这是我们的村长，是我家一个亲近的朋友。
住在这地方就是五代，中间是个现在就是都是两农，就是社区上农民，就是说种地呀、物的造树呀，就是弄这这种的。从我爷爷时候开始就做买卖，就是这个跑买卖，做这个买卖是，买卖做的大，就是在就是那个外边出去，后子再一买卖一回来，等个后乡的时候他就不行了，做买卖就不行，这就是都是种靠种地过为生。三姓，姓刘的，姓叶的。早以前在你们这地方，你锄着白石头、垫石头，在你们这吃就是果子人，在外面吃。有教书的，又考了学校那个念了大学的，这些钱的，吃饭的都有。现在可是没有。
你这个到底是什么？
这是孝。是跟个父亲带孝，跟这家庭，跟这几个人家庭现在是最苦了。我现在可苦多了。我兄妹五个，我是老大。
啊，
我那个大妹妹，去世了，也是个有病，去世了也是个十多年了。去年七月，我小弟又去世了。这不是今年正月，我父亲又去世。我小弟去年去世是个38岁的，拉这个沙子，就是给人的兴建拉沙子的时候，沙埋了，埋土里边，埋死我死了，就是。
这个是我大女儿，这个是二儿子。这个是三儿子，这个是我外甥，我大儿子不在，大儿子没有证，这个是大儿子。
2006年又担心这个，这通过这省院多少的选举，我又担了庄主任一个话，我这事儿弄这个学校，你说不弄学校，连个那学校倒出来。
这是我以前的学校，老师不愿意到这里来教书，嫌这里太远，工资太低。
光光着，那么你想比太阳更早的回家，目的是为了？为了玩了吧？是不是？
是
了。那么玩、学习和玩要互相的搭配起来，才能学好功课。来，月儿站起，谁站慢了？谁站慢了？谁了？红伟，什么样？红伟刚才怎么样了？不高兴。怎么样来了？没有啊，没有认真的听。
近两年，你看那个教育局要的3000块钱，把学校改修了呀。
一年级几成？来，我们请。
言，佛提杨柳醉中烟，儿童散学归来早，麻城东风放纸鸢。
谢谢我们弄得好老师，有了好老师的来的老师啊，你们这地方走一圈就是一年换一回老师，你这就不好，说这事儿就不好。如今的这两个老师来的去年前年来的，这是没问题，这是教育老师啥时间扯了就能教好，啥时间短了就不好。
我吗？三年级的举手。
今天我们这转就去外头住的学生只有哎呀二十好几个，就在厂里边住着，厂里边的秀帅
这块了，彩虹吧，那么师娘彩虹今天最高兴了，那么是不是最高兴，我们接下来看啊，来花学生，
为什么没有五年级呢？
人家地方都没有，一到这个五年级的话是人都是寒山这个中小校，啊就是到了中小校的，这个中小原来是寒山，最后又搬到教会，真是一到这个初中年级不有这个五年级，就是一至四年级。
那怎么办呢？
啊？
怎么办呢？都要搬走了。
那五年级又都是从这搬的，五年级都从这搬的。这四年级的一至四年级就在我们这初中念的，可是学校好了人们念，学校办的不好了人们都在外边走了，就不在这个厂里边念。这在厂里边的孝顺的都是走了。
你觉得应该吗？
不应该走嘛，你们办法不走这学校不好吧，学校老师的住处啊都没有，那只好走嘛，现在没有老师怎么去教化，那只好走，都走了。
我们的村长啊，他热情而且好客，他给了我在这个村我能待两年，其实他给我一大部分的支持和鼓励，所以让我留在了这里。他好像常常像爸爸一样常提醒我们说，你要去适应环境了，不管在什么时候只要相信转圈能发展起来，那么你就有留在这家的希望。
谁给那个老师的薪水啊？
教育局。
多少钱呢？
一块一百五，一百五，这还是现在涨的，原来是八十，去年涨，去年涨，这就是八十，去年九月份涨，看到可怜。
三二三四五六七八，
这跟着连这个完了五万零的四百一十九块钱，四百一十七块钱花了。我贷款贷的时候，贷款是高利，贷款三户，逾期三户，跟陕西的人讲，逾期三户贷四万。我电话电的是一万多，最后这个五万多块钱休息，这个出的人们集资的两万两千五，我出的人们集资的户了两千五，相关的教育局就给了两万一，现在还剩两万六千九百一十七块钱，现在没底气，这不是还是高利贷，高利贷你没办法，你只好贷，你不贷我钱就是学不起，怎么办？
你怎么换呢？
啊，
你怎么换那个钱呢？
还是教育给了两万，给了就还了两万，现在如今还剩两万，还有我的六千几还没有给了，
那怎么办呢？
来可能是用是不是，这就现在用不下，
那怎么办呢？
那么办，
快起来，
快一点，
再加快点菜就够，
一把子饭
这啥子干，啥子干，
活到一下来干啥？
哭得到什么程度了？我报上我就有病，脚上有病。我女儿给了我二百块钱，叫我买药，她不知道，她就偷出去，给学校买了这个轿子。老师住的那个地方有啥的个，因为她欠下的账债，警察给她生气啊，我也不管了。我现在报上我现在这个病就已经就不行，你看着我这个，我啥都不能干。只能在家里把他干个家务，在我啥都不能干，是这么个啊。现在我都买药吃个药都买不起，没有钱，药债太多了啊。自己家多哈都不算哈，他还有学校，修这个学校又投资了那么多啊。
这个家里边的很多 少气的。
现在我们家就上不起学，也不上学，
也
不拿我花。
他四个孩子，只有两个
也不上，
上不起学，
上不起学。
这是这么小的在。
这这个了，在现在上学，将来不上学吧，在这还。儿子，你长大咋的？长大好好念书啊！啊，大不了那是开车。
当初都有这个重男轻女这个习惯，生下这个三个女的嘞，没有小子，还想生个小子，就和那个花样的一样，有几个帅几个吧，是那么样，无论当中就过去。主要是当初偏僻。
小花子不。
我爸爸是农民，但是他能做很多事，放羊、烧庄，他喜欢唱歌。
除了放羊、牵牛，还有抽烟，还会做什么？
还会种地呢。我们这个地方气候比较适宜，五谷杂粮都可以种。一年吧，这里的地方本身是个旱年比较多，这个地方叫十年九旱的地方，那也收不上多少粮食，基本上。也不够吃，也差不多。
最大新闻在这儿是什么？你最感动的？
最感动的是我那个，我觉得那个我们的婆家好厉害呀、啊。那个，尤其是那个神舟六号，那竟然能飞上天，并且能抓人。我觉得那件事情我最感动的。
三十里的平川四呀四十里头的滩，五十里楼上的各家看呀看妹妹，看了一回妹妹抹了一口水呀，你是哥哥后悔呀不后悔。
我有三个儿子，两个都去外边打工了，只有一个最小的在教坊也读书了，上五年级了。因为这里没有学校了，只好离开这儿。
他就搬迁去了，我要送他吧，还得掏车费呀、啊。他一个人的车费就行了，我们两个人就掏不起那么多的车费呀、啊，他自己就去了。
我三弟在这所中心小学读书，我想他会很想家的。
这个出个一二十多个，一二 城里面念书是23个，可是城里面念书也困难，城里面是个愿意这样子，愿意留下的，愿意念不好，一个班80个娃，你们也别救了。
人在话中有。
这个测点并销过程的时候，有没有人反对过？
有，一开始呢，有的家长们接受不了，就是他们的小孩还小，是吧？跑到远的地方。
听说在那里吃住，每月要缴100元，父母的压力很大。
县城初中就大学的10%左右，考不上了，有的了就留下来继续，有的了就打工。
今年我们地方的黄种都烂了，我们全都没有收成，粮食也不种，都是靠造收。这不是现在种都烂光了，人民没有这个收入，都去外边打工去。打工出去就到这福建这交口县，下麦油，下麦油挺危险的，弄不着就被人家泡傻了，或者是泡坏了。来到了谁来就是买些洗小药、些需要的药。就是这个字变了，这叫的写些东西反正需要，这很俺老师这个很个大道的，就给山里卖。那边的地方就是为偏僻，那帮地方是靠这个花口办的，周围都那再没有地方卖，只好到石头厂里卖。到石头厂里来，只要路好走的话就了，也2个小时，2个多小时的事。那要是不好走，一下雨的话就这4、5个小时。 1200块钱，一个月100，出去外边教练手的是2个娃，连这个也连这个人物，一年赚是8000，这8000块钱活够。
我们说赚起来的，呀，这这么大的也有80块钱。你说我想要建眼镜，是交给好活呢，
贷款有2万。 要贷款借的钱借的钱教他们念书，你不用不上这来吧，他们真上不了学。
他说今年吧贷出来2000，明年贷出3000，一共要讲出来20000。
孩子上学为什么这么重要啊？
因为我们不是，
因为我们就没有文化，
没有文化，
在这个社会上来说吧，就是好像是傻子一样。
我们全不识字，都
不
识字，
没有文化，
没有办法
呀，就上学嘛。
啊，没有办法呀，你
哪有打工嘛？
我们老家就是那个学校没有初中。
那农村里没有5年级，为什么没有初中？你知不知道为什么没有？
哎呀，你不问我也忘记了，我也不知
道。
然后你不问我也是忘记了，我们也是不知道，晓得为什么这是没有5年级。
学校有点变化，我们就
学校有点变化，有点又设置。
假如你
这
个
初中吧，
就
是初中吧，也是考老师，
我
们当然也
有
进去。
有个初中，我们就回去。嗯。
老家嘛，
住到这儿吧，住到这儿又是没有钱，搞消费，啥又掏钱。回到老家就省一点钱嘛。
所以你们想你将来是怎么办呢？
哎呀，
将来走
看
一步，
走一步看。
没有想到将来，
然后没有想到将来，老二不读书。
你爸爸在哪？
在没有。
他每天回家吗？
你自己不肥，谁肥？
你三个儿子，老大老二不上学，你对他们失不失望啊？
哦，我还是在我心里吧，我觉得我这个老儿子没有担尽到他的责任，他也没有上学。在我心里吧，我觉得说非常对不起孩子。也可以说是我的错，我因为我没有努力让他上学。我孩子们在小学上学的时候挺好的，就是我没钱让他上学，所以说他们现在就自己去打工。
有的学校的娃娃啥教的少，都是多出来一边子，就条件不好的，底子没有做好，反正到学校的时候他都搞不上，就是黑乎乎搞了完仗着底起的嘛，他们原来没拿起底子没拿铺好，这是不大拿起。
其实一个家庭对一个孩子的影响最大，家庭是孩子的第一个学校，他们觉得家庭负担重了，就再也不想上学了，不想让父母为难了。
我希望不但他希望读大学，我还希最希望的是我的经济实力达不到，如果达到的话，我希望上北大上学，也可以要是说的话，如果是他有雄心壮志的话，那美国哈佛大学的也可以上啊。
希望是上到上学，上着进来成一个好才女，国家正在贡献，我来什么也干不了，让他干点好事吧。
只有他好好的念书，能力有限的话，也就没办法了，那只好去打工了。那最好是他让他学的学历省一点吧，去国外打工，把他呢把那个国外的外币都挣到他中国来。
的儿子最小嘛，他从小就没有离开过爹娘嘛。离开爹娘的时候，父母当然作为一个父母吧，很想念自己的孩子。
那个下不给这学校，大小那个是。一至六年级是初中班不可以办的话，那是办上一至五年级班都可以。
Maybe if I throw open the, or would you like to make some initial remarks, or just, what was it? And tell us a little bit more first a bit about the village. How did you find it? How did you go about making the connection? It's not easy often to find people as candid as they were with you.
I'm a professional filmmaker, but many of the times I do charity work. And in this particular case, was hired as director for Sinken, but with the grassroots, and they've been in China for 30 years to promote education for especially women and the poor rural areas. So la-di-da,
and they said that it would be really great to do a documentary film about this extremely poor rural area in Shanxi. I didn't believe how poor it was, honestly. And we travel up and down the road in the truck, in the car. And I found extremely rewarding to able to capture the reality when the reality is unfolding as of today's China. And making documentary film in China, it's extremely simple and extremely difficult. I use extreme, it's not in a very practical sense. By the way, anyone Xerox my stuff?
Yes, they're gonna hand it out to everybody as they go out the door to keep people from shuffling papers all the way through the mail.
Right. I have a document from China's Central Committee and indicate about 300 items you cannot shoot, you cannot film. It's funny because I really want to make a movie about the things that I cannot shoot, But obviously I had to work in China a little longer. And if anyone who interested to see those documents, and then once you read this document, if you write a proposal or feature screenplay based on items you cannot shoot, and you will go, no problem. But on the other hand, if you violate any of those issues that China feels extremely sensitive, it's quite difficult. Why? Because 1 out of 10 Chinese citizens is a member of a Communist Party. So you have a lot of informers. Then informers, not necessarily, you would think that the bureaucrats, the informers could be farmers, they could be school teacher, could be anyone. So if you ever reflect any negative aspect of China, and right away, somehow, they accelerate all the way into Beijing, and you will be stuck. And Zigun, for instance, when I was filming in a Miao village, we were stopped. Stopped for reasons rather peculiar, because I was filming young children after school. They were cleaning the window, but the window was broken. They were sweeping the floor. And to me, it would be a great example for students, privileged students in Hong Kong, in America, to learn how hard it is for them to receive an education. Not only they have to be participating in the classroom, but at the same time, they have to do the cleaning stuff. But for local communist propaganda unit looked upon as if I was making fun of them. So this issue is very delicate, and how you balance what you think it will be really good for the Western audience, not necessarily, is for the Communist Party. You're gonna laugh your butt out when you see the items they don't want you film. I did a piece for Shanghai Expo, and that's when they handed it for me. The reason I took the job because I really want to know how the censorship it works. Censorship works before you even have the conceptual idea and all the way through to your final product. This is how the censorship works. And how you break away the censorship. That's why I said it's easy and also extremely difficult. How do you break it away the censorship? You got to know the local people. You must have the trust of the people such as these farmers. And once I identified these characters and I knew they would not, report to the local government. But China has so many great, great, great stories that has been told, has not been told. And my next project, Zigan asked me, as you are here, to do a film about migrant workers. Why migrant workers? There are zillions of migrant workers in Shanghai. You know, Kitty, you know, they do your nail polish, they, you know, they do the waitress, waiters, and do your hairs. But the, one of the most important elements of migrant workers, guess what? The garbage collectors. Not only they collect garbage, they also recycle garbage. Well, we don't have plastic cups tonight, thank God, FCC don't. All the plastic cups, everything plastic in China has been recycled through the garbage. And these people are migrant workers. How the government treat migrant workers? Yes, officially, they are needed labor. But and yet, they are not being treated as equal by the Chinese themselves. Therefore, there is internal conflict between Chinese who resides in major city and Chinese who have migrated into the city. And I found this quite interesting, you know, because there is such ignorance among the people who, like us, having a wonderful dinner, and we have no clue where the garbage goes. The most interesting is, going back to education, the migrant community has migrant a school, and that school, blah, is built that right next to the garbage recycle plant. Just imagine, students are reading right next door. It's the garbage recycle. So when I saw this situation, I think this is such a dichotomy, you know, between the young generation, garbage, and the future of China. Perhaps China will be something, the issue in dealing with the garbage becomes almost a metaphoric, if you get it.
Thank you. Well, that gives us a lot to talk about. Who would like to ask the first question? Please identify yourselves. Back in the corner, please. Just please wait for the microphone, sorry.
Which year was this movie filmed?
What year was the movie filmed?
2 years ago.
How representative of rural schools is that?
How representative of rural schools is that? It seems poorer than many areas. I mean, I've been in areas with migrant
it
workers.
It is a very typical example. And in China, I don't know when you know about Chinese policy. They change every minute. In fact, I'm under the Fulbright. And my next project is supposed to dealing with China and Africa. You know, and it was all approved, and I arrived in Beijing January, and as of last week, China's new policies, no documentary in dealing with Africa or Middle East because the kidnapping situation in Sudan, etc. Okay, this particular school policy, it came out like a, you know, overnight. China decided, okay, we have all these little villages, A, B, C, D, you know, all this little village. It is too much resource, you know, and, you know, it's just not working. And so what is the best way? It's called 彻底冰消, and eliminate all the dots. I mean, dots, you can imagine, dot, all this little, merge them into a township. And so we can utilize the resource. And students, you know, that have a more better teacher. In some way, it's correct, you know, in terms of theoretically speaking, Yes, you have a blackboard, you have a classroom, you have a teacher who speaks some English, perhaps. Theoretically, it's correct. But in practicality-wise, it's completely dysfunctional. The kid had to travel from a village to the township. What does that mean? They had to live in a dormitory. You see the dormitory, 20 kids in one bed, okay? The parents had to pay dorm and pay food. And not only that, the classroom was so crowded, you know, with 100 kids, yapping, 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 memorize, memorize, memorize. And I personally, I think to eliminating the village, the small village school, is a big mistake. But on the other hand, you look at a small village, especially they live in a cave, and you have first grade all the way to fifth grade, all in the same classroom, and teacher only gets 70 yuan, which is how much is that?
It's
only
$10.
$10,
yeah.
A month. So nobody wanna go there, you know? So here is the contradiction. You know, teacher would not want to go to the village, but village, on the other hand, kept the family together. So now they move the kids out of family, so the family become extremely dysfunctional. And for instance, this particular family, two brothers had to go out to work in order to support their third child. And believe it or not, the third kid dropped out of school now. They couldn't afford it. So education system is quite chaotic. And I think that China right now is swimming, looking for solutions. In fact, I was just talking to Keith. About a month ago, I was approached by Department of Education, our Chinese government, which is, you know, big shot, you know. because I'm a professor at the New York University, one of very famous, you know, department named Teach School of Arts, and we graduate like most famous people like Ang Lee, Spike Lee, Martin Scorsese, you name it, and then you know, Olive Stone, etc. You know, sometimes we just joke about it. When you spell Teach School of Art backwards, it's called Shit School for Stars. You know. Yeah, we do come out with a lot of famous people. So they sought after me, asked me whether would I be an advisor for Department of Education to establish a MFA program in China to train documentary filmmakers. I was rather surprised. I said, why? They said we don't have any institution training solid journalist nor documentary filmmaker, because a journalist is sort of basically become a mouthpiece, you know. Documentary filmmakers are much more observational. They might able to document an event with a much longer period of time rather than slip of news, right? Would I be interested? I said, sure. And they asked me who could be the best partner to be a part of China's Department of Education. So you name it. Of course, my school NYU was listening, Harvard, Stanford, and Yale, you know, all the Ivy League school. And I realized, I said, well, this is a new game for them again, you know. And I was here last year. I never heard about this kind of investment to join force with the West to train the local educator or local future educators. So in terms, the rural education is again, it came out with nowhere, and now they're experimenting, but on the expenses of children, not on the expenses of a program per se. And I'm very much concerned about, you know, the direction of China, but and yet I'm not hesitating to be able to be one of the contributors based on my, you know, background. Did I answer your question?
That's all.
It's a long answer.
Long answer.
Duh.
Who else would like to ask a question here in the front, please?
Yeah.
Please wait for the microphone.
If my answer is too long, just cut. Be a director, cut. Just cut me off. No offense.
Christine, when I'm watching your documentary, I was reminded of and I mean this as a compliment to you, I was reminded me of a very good film about 10 years ago of Zhang Yimou, you know, Not One Less. It's the same idea of rural education in crisis, flight to the city because of poverty. And both that film and your documentary show that despite the obvious poverty in the villages and the overwhelming burdens that they have, there still seems to be a commitment, an understanding by the elders that education is important and it is the future for escaping some of this poverty. I can't help feeling that the central authorities, even though they seem powerless to help the villages, they are at least acknowledging that education is needed. Did you sense through what you were doing that there is a central initiative to help the actual children get themselves out of poverty, or was this just window dressing by the central education authorities?
Well, the parents are illiterate. Majority of parents are illiterate. So here you have a major contradiction. They are pushing the child to be somebody, but they have no education. To me, education is important, not only on the emphasis of a young child. I think the parents need to be educated. Rural parents have zero education. They just feel guilty, or they beat the shit out of the kids if they come home with a B+. So education is not one-dimensional, just the child. The child becomes so burdened with the guilt, with this hope to achieve certain goal, which absolutely is abstract to them. So to me, to solve the education, rural education, is not as simple as the party leader thinks. We are talking about, again, China is 高考怎么讲? How do you translate 高考?
National Entrance Examination for Universities.
National Entrance Examination for University, which was established by Confucianism. In many ways, is ideological, very correct way of promoting young people. That you take this major examination, whether you come from dirt poor, you come from middle class, there was no middle class, of course, you know. And once you strive, you work hard, you take this examination, you ended up gonna be in Beijing, serve the king. It's an extremely democratic thought, correct? But in abstract sense. But however, if a child grew up in the city, a child grew up in extreme poverty condition, their parents did not have the education. One set of parents had education, at least, you know, grammar school. Other parents had zero education. These two child would grow up within a very different kind of environment. For them to enter a national examination with a different kind of expectation, different kind of skill, different kind of mentality, of course, they cannot compete. So the ideal, and I think is extremely democratic, but in terms of implementation, how to have the kind of equality the government up to now cannot solve the problem. I have challenged the education department as a Gaokao is the most stupidest thing because you're looking at exam score. What happened if someone can really great to blow a saxophone? Someone who is really, really great at drawing. Someone is really great at abstract mathematics. They will fail this national exam. They don't take the individual talent account. So it's this massive factory outlet. Government recognized that, but they don't know how to deal with it. Anyone knows how to deal with it? No. So here, I'm dealing with the Department of Education. You want to start the most prestigious documentary MFA program. All right. You got to have the best student in your first cohort. Why? Regardless the economical background, regardless, you know, the Gaokao, you look at the portfolio, you interview them in person, you got to have this individual contact, individual eye contact to see this student is going to be exceed or not going to be able to exceed. Not only that, don't think about individual. When you recruit a class, you look at the composition of a class, how individual can fit to each other, not the individual talent. Someone from a garbage collector, someone who had a mathematic background, someone who is musician, someone who is writer. You look at the composition of a class, then how this individual can exchange that talent. And that's how you promote what government says, creativity. That's how you promote a new generation. So I discussed this with the Department of Education. That makes sense. But whether this kind of new education idea or ideology will be implemented, I don't know.
Up here, please.
Christine, you've mentioned that the government commissioned some film that you produce, and I'd like to know what is the audience for those films. Secondly, are you able to take your own initiative and create a film that you wish to produce? And if so, who funds it, and who is the audience, and how do you distribute the product, and what's the economics of that?
Just kidding.
I only did two film for government. One is for Shanghai Expo. That's when I have the 300 pages no, which of course I did not obey, and turned out to be fine. Another film is about retirement in China, which is a rather peculiar situation, very appalling for the Western country. For women, you had to retire at the age of 50. For men, 53. You have 1.3 billion people. What do you do after you retire? So I was examining that retirement situation. It's called Second Spring. And it went extremely well in China. And I also challenged the notion the retirement was way too early. But for Western audience, they could not comprehend how these retired people still having great time. They don't understand. Why? Communism also has positive aspect of it. Because when these elderly, or now the retired, they grew up in communal life since they were itsy bitsy kid, and they didn't move around. Everybody knew everybody. You live next door, upstairs, downstairs, you're in a commune. So when they get to the age of 50, 60, their buddies They know the children, grandchildren, the gossip. So they hang around with the pajamas, they play mahjong, they smoke cigarettes. Elderly having a great time. But for West, they cannot comprehend. So this is a positive aspect of being a communal life since you were with kindergarten up. Whereas in the West, we are so individualistic. Once you all out to the retire home, out somewhere, there is contradiction. So my film is dealing with it, looking at two different isms, two different systems, and not all black and white. Certain ism, certain system has its own positive result, and I cannot deny it. You go to China, hallelujah, the older people, they have a good time. Yeah? They go trip together, they exercise 6 o'clock morning doing a rock and roll, dancing. Cool. Do you ever see this in West? Hell no. They are hiding in their own little cocoons, so terrified, and they go out, everybody says, oh, you old man, old lady, you've been looking down. So this is, the other side of society I like to reflect, which rather interesting. This particular film has been accepted by both East and West because I was not making a propaganda film. I was making a film documenting the reality of the elderly. I'm sorry. What was it?
How do you finance it? Yeah.
Independent film has to be financed by independent. So therefore, I'm here. I'm doing a migrant worker, which is super sensitive film. Super sensitive. But I know how to talk to the commies, none of the commies, Because I'm not portraying them as being degraded. I'm portraying them as part of important contribution to the society. And I'm also trying to point out there is a blind side of those Chinese who are halves, that have no understanding how their daily life has been dealt by thousands and thousands of migrant workers. And it's sort of give a reflection of those who haves, but at the same time, give the dignity of those who have not. So in terms of subtext, or I would say that the story is not saying who's a bad guy or who are the good guy. I'm really looking at once our lives are being so consumed by this globalization, daily activities, money making, et cetera, et cetera. And how one single person start to lose their understanding of what other people, small people are doing for the society and for your own livelihood. For instance, I got a wonderful apartment on Star Street. I walk in, concierge comes, open the door, and that whole, 9 yards, right? And they have migrant workers, could be, But since we are so comfortable, we just sail through without consider the layers of a society, how they are also part of a major contributor of building the future, or maybe destroy the future, who knows. But since China has become so much a consumer society, and average people have no idea what they eat. Like tonight, for instance, what I'm doing with this, where does it go? Maybe it's going to be tomorrow is your Holiday Inn Cup, you know. Have no idea. So to me, it's you talking about migrant workers, but and yet dealing with larger philosophical concept of how we become more and more isolated from the whole means of production.
So
who is the audience? Worldwide. How distributed? Okay. All my films has been shown in many different venues. HBO, PBS, many times. Lifetime in New York, United States, Sundance Channel, etc. In China, of course, Shanghai TV. I don't bother CCTV, which Shanghai TV will reach about like how many millions of people. And also in Asia, you know, Taiwan, Singapore, Korea. Anybody who are Korean? Nobody's Korean? Oh, shoot. I just got back from LA 2 days ago. I'm making a film about a major event happened 20 years ago. Los Angeles riot, Rodney King, remember? A black guy got beat to death, practical death. And four white policemen got off scot-free, and ultimately he went for the civil rights trial and won $3.5 million. 20 years later, 20 years ago, I made a film about Los Angeles riot. 20 years later, I actually interviewed Rodney King. So you ask me who are the audience, you know? The audience are vast, especially young generation. They have... if you, any investor here got to invest in cell phone, all the movies, short clips is going to be delivered via iPhones.
Okay, let's take one more question, and then I think Ms. Choi can stay for more questions afterwards for people who want to, but we want to let give people an opportunity. Can I get another question maybe over on this side? Have I been missing anybody over here? No?
Yeah.
Nobody missing? Okay, over here then, please. One last question, please.
Oh, yeah.
Hi there. Just going back to the teachers, and in the film, you're saying the wage for the teacher, I think she said $20, or you're saying some teachers are only $10 a month. How does that compare to other professions in China? And is anything being done?
Oh, very, very low.
Very low.
Extremely, extremely low. That is what big question that China is facing in terms of discrepancy, in terms of have and have nots. Again, as a teacher, in order for you to go from a ruler to township to Beijing and Shanghai, if you graduate from a very rural school, no hope. Absolutely no hope. That's what Gaokao, it becomes the entrance examination. You go to Tongji, you go to Fudan, you go to Tsinghua, you go to Beijing University. Your life's a set pattern. Unlike in the United States, either you can go to a small community college or you go to an unknown college, but and yet you can excel in the field. In China, it's impossible because the school meant tremendous, tremendous importance to your career. Now I'm teaching at Beijing Shifan Dashui, Beijing Normal University. It's one of the top universities used to train teachers. But no longer is only teaching, you know. They also have a different disciplines. But once if you get in the university, you when you graduate, you're guaranteed the best school. But if you got into third-rate, fourth-rate teacher school, for a long time, up to 2000, all the jobs were appropriate for you. The government were appropriate for you. When you graduate from a particular institution, they said, this is where you go, this is where you go to. But today, that system has been eliminated. I am not sure it's good or not, because in some way for the teacher who did not go to prestigious school, now they had to compete with the teacher who went to prestigious school. Before then, they would be automatically allocated to the ruler country like this. But now, in terms of allocating to the ruler country, is also, in itself, is a problem. Yeah.
I was stunned by that figure of 70 RMB per month, because a migrant worker now in Shenzhen can earn over 2,000.
That's
so
why they don't
want to
be teacher.
30 times multiple.
That's why they don't want to be teacher.
Was the teacher whom you were profiling there, was he a college graduate?
It's not a certificate.
Certificate. Doesn't that mean he went to a 3-year degree? He did a...
Probably 2 years.
Or 2-year degree?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
still.
Yeah.
And one other question. In the movie, the translation, were you using a dollar sign? Were they giving... Was that... I should have been paying attention, but I scrolled out. Was it... You weren't making it in conversion to U.S. dollars. It looked like you... From the soundtrack, it sounded like you were just saying they were using a dollar sign for RMB.
No,
was RMB.
I think it was dollar.
It was U.S. dollars.
Yeah,
it was converted.
Yeah,
okay, I
yeah.
missed that.
Converted to U.S. dollars.
At what? That was would have been at like 7 or so then, probably at the time you made the movie. 7 RMB to the dollar.
Huh?
6.6. Okay, I didn't catch it. It's 6.3 now. Whatever. Anyway, okay. Oh, that's right. You're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. You did. Yeah.
You know what? It's funny. The opening and closing song is by one of the Chinese most famous singer, Li Lianjie. Li Lianjie. The opening and, you know, he's very, very famous. And since it was part of Shanghai TV, and they said, we don't have to pay for the rights, so we just pirate it. So the piracy had nothing to do with the international piracy. You just pirate right in front of China. We never pay the rights. And Li Lianjie, a songwriter, big star, of course he would never sue Shanghai TV. This is amazing. So I realized, wow, when I go to China, I'm going to pirate, you know, Andy Lau, anybody, you know, Hong Kong star, because they're too afraid to sue Chinese. So, this is how it works. This is another interesting thing about making films in China.
Well, with that, let me wrap up. But that's a great finishing anecdote. Actually, do you want to say anything or something? No, okay.
Power
Thank
to
you.
Li Lianjie. Sue me.
Thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you very much for coming.
I
really want to thank Keith, you know.
We always try to give our guests something to remember the club by.
Oh, yeah? How
so,
nice.
Yes.
I was going to steal this, but they already got one.
Oh, you're welcome. Take that one, too. The more the merrier.
Just
she has very kindly agreed to stick around if some of you have some more questions this evening. Yeah. And we really appreciate your coming. We hope you'll see you at one or more of our lunches next week. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.